Hello!
Hello! And welcome to episode 6 of the ADHD Science Podcast. How are you, Tess?
I have a cold, but I am living.
A little bit poorly, but you're pushing through, because it's nearly the holidays, really.
Yeah. Exciting. I mean, I've been off school for quite a while now, but I've been doing work experience, which is very exciting.
Experiencing the world of work. I don't think you're going to be excited by work for very much longer, but long may it last. We are going to talk today to Kate Anning, who is a PhD student at the Centre for Human Developmental Sciences at Cardiff University.
Mm-hmm.
It's another one which is at least to an extent about executive function, and I don't make any apology for that because I think it's a really important subject and also a really good companion piece to Alex Hendry's interview last week.
Go check that out if you haven't.
Go check it out. This is more about so Alex's stuff is more about how children react when they really want something and how they kind of use their executive functions when they really want something, like, for instance, biscuits. But Kate's is more about maybe older children and doing things that are maybe are not quite so motivating. So in a way, more relevant for school, where you are not really necessarily motivated by the task itself, and
yes,
more by... Anyway, we'll talk about this in the interview, but more. But just to give you a kind of intro, I am aware that Well, I mean, I am aware that we kind of dive into it with these researchers, and getting a little bit of an idea of what kind of ideas we're talking about is probably a good way of starting us off.
You're so wise.
I am very wise. So let's let's dive in, shall we? Oh, you're going to have a doorbell this week, aren't we? Because you wanted a doorbell.
I asked for a doorbell.
So who's at the door, Tess?
I think it might be Kate Anning.
Yay! Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Welcome. So, joining us today is Kate Anning. Can you just introduce yourself, Kate? Where are you from? What what your kind of title and role is there?
Hi, both. I'm Kate Anning. I am a PhD student in my final year of my PhD based at Cardiff University. And I'm based in the Neurodevelopmental Assessment Unit at Cardiff. I'm doing my research with children who are referred to the Neurodevelopmental Assessment Unit for an assessment.
So essentially, that's an NHS unit, is it?
It's funded by the Waterloo Foundation, and we work with schools. So we work with schools who then make referrals to us with children aged 4 to 7.
And 4 to 7. So that's quite a small window in a sense, of the total kind of neurodevelopmental spread by age. Okay, so that's really interesting. And you work with sort of clinicians and doctors and so forth at the centre, and to make diagnosis or just to kind of assess.
No, we don't make a diagnosis. So all the children are referred to us for a range of difficulties that they're having at school. So it can be things like memory, self-regulation, emotional difficulties, all sorts of things that prompts the referral from SENCOs and classroom teachers to us. And then we carry out an assessment and make a report which identifies strengths and difficulties in each child. And that goes back to the school. But the processes that we measure are things like attention, language, memory, emotion recognition, specific processes rather than diagnosis.
Okay. We'll come back to that. Shall we crack on? Because the reason I sort of was turned on to your work was a paper that you published recently. So, Tess, do you want to start the questioning?
Well, first of all, what question were you asking? Not asking. Well, I guess,
question
were you asking in your research?
Yeah.
So the question that I was asking in the paper that you're talking about is, I had a few questions actually. First of all, I wanted to see the kinds of reasons that children were referred to us. So all the teachers who made referrals completed a strengths and difficulties questionnaire, And the first thing that I did was look at the kinds of difficulties that teachers were reporting, whether it was hyperactivity, emotional difficulties, pro-social problems at school. So I looked at the prevalence of those different difficulties in the sample. And then all the children completed a range of different executive function tasks, which is tasks that measure things like attention, memory, cognitive flexibility and inhibition. And then I wanted to see the relationship between those difficulties in those processes and symptoms of different disorders like ADHD, autism, oppositional defiance disorder and anxiety. So I had a few questions.
Well, I think I just want to unpick a few things because I think executive functions come up for us in a previous episode, although they may not go out in order, so that might not be a meaningful
thing. Yeah, I was wondering if it would be something you've already covered or not.
No, well, I think we've mentioned it, but I think it's always worth digging into. How would you explain executive function? Because it's such an important aspect of all of these conditions.
Yeah, I think I use quite a broad definition of executive functions because in young children, the differentiation of these individual processes is less clear, whereas in older children and adults, there's more clear separation between what memory is and what cognitive flexibility is, whereas children will probably use all these processes at the same time. But I would say it's the top-down processes that we use to carry out goal-directed behaviour. So it's when we have to hold instructions in our memory, we have to switch between different tasks, we have to inhibit different responses so that we can focus on our attention on what needs to be done.
So what kind of actual things are the kids doing in your research? Because we've had previous guests talking about children, you know, younger children than you're studying, trying to find a sort of smartie in a box, not breaching any confidentiality because it's all going to be on the podcast. But what are your subjects? What are your subjects doing?
Yeah, I think the smartie in a box sounds like a hot executive function task, which is designed to be kind of frustrating and involve emotional, motivational processes, which I am interested in as well. But for this particular study, I was focused on more abstract executive functions, which is when the tasks that we're asking children to do aren't emotionally motivating. There's not really any rewards or any kind of aversive stimuli or anything on there. So children, just for the episodic memory task, they have to remember a sequence of pictures and show them back to me in the same order. For the flexibility, they have to sort pictures by colour and then they have to sort by shape. So they have to switch between those different rules.
Surely that's more applicable to a school environment, because quite a lot of the time when you're doing tasks in school, there really is no motivation, other than just you've been told to do this, do it.
Absolutely, that's very true. You can't have smarties for every task in school. That would be a public health disaster.
Yeah, I think it varies a lot because some things in school are more motivating, or they might be socially motivating situations.
More quiet.
But I agree in terms of like the classroom and sitting still and doing maths or kind of academic subjects, you see strong relationships between the executive function tasks that I was describing and those tasks at school.
So, and the other thing I wanted just to unpack, because I think most people who would be listening to a couple of our episodes would know what we mean by ADHD, what we mean by autism, although we're unpacking lots of things about them. Oppositional defiant disorder, I mean, can you just sort of briefly explain how you think about that, how to think about that most effectively?
Yeah, so there's different dimensions of symptoms, a bit like how for ADHD you have attentional symptoms and hyperactive symptoms. With oppositional defiance disorder, you have oppositional symptoms, which is when a child might have an instruction and they'll want to do the opposite thing. And then you also have negative affect symptoms, which is like high emotionality, reacting strongly negatively to a certain situation, being really upset by being told no or something like that. So it's kind of those kinds of behaviours that you see in children, but to a more extreme level.
Okay. And I suppose because for some people it's quite a controversial diagnosis, but if you're just picking up features of it, you don't necessarily have to worry about that particular question.
No, I think a real kind of strong message for this paper is to look at these things dimensionally, and we're not using it as a diagnosis. We're just looking at whether children with more of those kinds of behaviours have more difficulty on these executive function tasks, and whether children with more of those kinds of behaviours would benefit from an intervention around these kinds of cognitive processes, rather than diagnosing the disorder, because we're actually looking at the difficulties that the children are having in terms of their cognitive processes, rather than what diagnostic category they would fit into. Because as we kind of know, but all these things are associated with huge variation. ADHD is a really good example in that not all children with ADHD have the same executive function difficulties, and you see so much variation there. But one thing that might contribute to that variation is this high co-occurring of other disorders as well. So it might be that symptoms of autism or symptoms of anxiety also affect one's performance on an executive function task as well, and might increase the variation that you see within ADHD.
So in this experiment, well, not experiment, but in this kind of
study
research that you were performing, I use experiment as a wide term, don't okay. worry, scientists. What did you find?
So what I found was that the reasons that teachers referred children showed really high overlap between each other. So children who had high hyperactivity also had high emotion problems, also had high conduct problems. So I saw a lot of overlap between different kind of symptom clusters that we kind of categorise as being separate, but actually a lot of the children show lots of symptoms in different categories. That was the first thing. The second thing was that there was a lot of variation in the kinds of difficulties on executive function tasks that children had. So about a quarter of children had difficulties with memory, about a quarter had inhibition difficulties, and about a quarter had flexibility difficulties. But the task that captured the most amount of difficulty in the sample was the attention task. So on this task, children had to follow a moving target around the screen for 5 minutes. It's quite boring. Children performed kind of below average, about a half of the sample performed below average. It was 55%.
Okay. So how far below average? Because if you average 50% of the general population would be below average, what do you mean by
over one standard deviation?
Over one standard deviation, yeah. Below. So that's, yeah. Sort of, you would expect 20 odd, and it's actually 50.
Yeah, it's actually more than that.
Okay.
And then the other main findings were the dimensional results. So controlling for co-occurring symptoms, I found that ADHD symptoms were associated with memory difficulties and inhibition difficulties, autism symptoms with better cognitive inhibition, anxiety with better cognitive flexibility, and oppositional defiance with poorer cognitive flexibility.
Oppositional defiance with poorer cognitive flexibility.
Yeah, so they had more difficulty on the rule switching task. So when they had to switch and sort by colour and then sort by shape, they struggled with that switching.
Oh, do you think that could be linked to inhibition? Like you've learned how to do it one way and then you're struggling to stop yourself from doing it that same way the second time?
Yeah, I think inhibition is a really important part of that task. And also, we know that with... sorry, I'll take some water.
Yes, of course.
Sorry.
With regulating negative emotions, like when you're upset, that might involve some switching so that you can kind of distract yourself from what you're upset about or think about something else. So it could be an important part of those symptoms as well, particularly in young children who have more of these like emotional outbursts than older children. it could be that cognitive flexibility plays an important part in regulating those negative emotions as well.
Yes, that's fascinating, because what was the cognitive flexibility relation, the relationship between cognitive flexibility and autism features in your work? Was that,
do you see, yeah, I was waiting,
so go on.
Yeah, didn't find a relationship there.
But that's so interesting.
Yeah, which is really interesting, because that's the kind of, we hypothesized to find a relationship there. And generally the literature has suggested that of the executive functions, the one that's most associated with autism would be cognitive flexibility. But we didn't find that.
I'm just thinking, it's setting off in my head this whole emerging idea that actually there's not an awful lot wrong with the way that autistic people think, as in that it is flexible, it is inductive. It's just, it doesn't, it's when you put autistic and neurotypical people together, that's when you get problems. Do you see what I mean? So there may be an apparent lack of social flexibility, but maybe it's not actually cognitive. I mean, obviously we're leaping.
Yeah, we have them.
But it's difficult. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah, we put forward several explanations for why we might have found this. And one that we did think about was that the task is administered on an iPad and the researcher just sits next to the child. So there's very minimal social interaction. And all of the rules and things like the switch, now switch to colour, now switch to shape, is all said by the iPad, not the researcher. And there's a lot of visual prompts as well that kind of guide the child onto which responses they need to be making. So in terms of like what kind of processes are involved, visual spatial reasoning and some of the processes that we know are associated with strength in autism as well are involved on that kind of task. And we did reduce the social demands and the language element. They didn't have to use any language, they just, you know, tap the answers, so it's less demanding than a lot of other flexibility tasks or a questionnaire that talks about flexibility in real life situations. It's a very different kind of process to the one that we were looking at, which is very kind of pure what we think cognitive flexibility is.
That is very interesting. Do you think it's less about the actual cognitive function itself and more just about the way that it manifests? Like,
yeah, I think it's really hard to kind of strip everything down. And I think for this experiment, we did try and use the purest measures possible where we didn't add environmental demands in there. But I think language and things like that are really important confounding variables to think about, particularly if you're looking at a relationship between autism and executive functioning.
I mean, I don't know nearly enough about autism to participate massively in this aspect of the conversation.
You know a bit about it.
We've never looked at it in psychology. I don't have it. So the only things I know about autism are from TikTok and from what you've said on the podcast.
TikTok is a very valid source of information.
TikTok is a terrible source of information.
All right. I don't know it. Fine. So maybe we should probably dive into autism in a bit more detail at a future date. But we'll talk about, we'll talk to Kate about her research today. Because you mentioned intervention. So are you also in this paper or in future papers looking at intervention? I know we're jumping forward to a future question as well.
Yeah, I think interventions is a really interesting area. And I think the paper highlights a lot about how interventions should be done as well as what potential interventions could be developed as a result. So I think one thing to think about is that we did find so much variation in our samples. So there is this need for a needs-based assessment before delivering an intervention. So rather than just using diagnosis to determine what kind of intervention would be beneficial, this research suggests that it's also important to first establish that the child has a problem in the area that you're trying to target, as well as maybe an attention difficulty or...
So just, I suppose, just the implication of what you're saying is that knowing that a child has ADHD doesn't necessarily tell you what executive function intervention is going to work for them.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's got huge implications.
And a lot of studies that have looked at the effectiveness of an executive function intervention in an ADHD sample might not have a pre-measure of executive functioning.
Well, they just look at ADHD kids or people as a block.
Yeah, I think first it's important to establish that there is a difficulty there before you then target it.
Yeah, of course.
And yeah, I mean,
Kate's team gets children who are having learning problems or behavioural problems in class.
Yes.
Okay, we'll cut this bit out.
I think I know what you're trying to get at. I think that.
Well, let Tess ask the question. Let Tess ask the question. So that because then we can edit and then we can.
Sorry about all that. I always mess this one up. Do you find that you get more children with behavioural problems or learning problems?
I think we get both. But I think that we do see more children who are easily identifiable by teachers. So that probably means they have more behaviours at school. What's really interesting is that we get some children who are referred and school might think that they have a learning problem, when actually we find that in a one-to-one environment, it's very quiet, there's no other children around. They can do quite well on our assessment. So we can say, actually, there's not a learning problem here. It's the classroom environment which is causing more difficulty than the actual academic task or the difficulty of the task that you're asking the child to do. It's more the environment that is making it difficult for them. But we do also have children who do struggle on, you know, executive function tasks as well. So it's really varied, but I think the likelihood of referral does go up if a child has more externalising behaviours in the classroom, because they're just more likely to be identified by teachers and just prompts more of a response.
So what is the gender kind of skewing of, or proportions of the children
question.
Who are?
Yeah, very, very.
Always make you think of the girls, those girls.
Yeah, that's very closely linked to what we were just talking about. So we see less girls than boys. I think it varies between a quarter to a third girls over time. But I think for the paper that I've just written, I think it's 25% girls.
I mean, that's about the referral rates for that age group. I mean, I think it equalises when they get a bit older, but at early primary, that's about right in terms of referral rates.
Yeah, and you see more internalising difficulties in girls. But I think that what we'd be worried about is that girls also mask a lot and they also have more internalising difficulties that maybe don't get noticed by teachers. It's not that they necessarily aren't also struggling.
Oh, we have a whole episode about that, don't we, Tess?
We do.
Whole episode about masking.
It's a very interesting one. I really find masking so interesting.
Yeah.
It is.
But
really,
this is what you're, because you're essentially going to pick up the ones who aren't as masking as effectively.
Yeah.
So, go on.
Next question. Yeah. What does this mean for people looking after ADHD people?
I think the main take-home message is that it's never a one-size-fits-all. And I think it's also really good to be aware that ADHD is highly comorbid with lots of other things as well. So to keep an eye out for other emerging conditions as well, like anxiety, other difficulties that can co-occur with ADHD. But also, thinking about what difficulties that child actually has rather than what they might think someone with ADHD might struggle with.
Yes. I mean, how difficult resource-wise, you know, say a school has got a child who's exhibiting these difficulties or struggling in school. I'm particularly interested, although this is an ADHD podcast, the cohort who are showing oppositional defiant behaviours in class and the fact that they've got cognitive difficulties. Differences. That's so interesting to me. How would a school assess these within the obviously limited resources that they have? Or can they? Or what should they do?
That's a really good question. I think that it's also good to have interventions on offer to just try out. And I think things like breaking down tasks into chunks, giving children movement breaks, opportunities for yeah, for moving around and breaking tasks down, yeah, limiting distractions. It's always worth having those things on offer and seeing if they help. Anyway, I don't think you need to do an assessment before you try out one of those strategies, because they're quite easy to try out. Breaking a task down, or letting a child jump around, or limiting distractions, they are all things that schools can probably do relatively easily. And then if it works, great. That might indicate that they've targeted something that's a difficulty for that child.
So they don't have to necessarily be guided by diagnosis. I mean, this is you know, really interesting. And again, to go back to the kids who are not particularly ADHD-ish but are really misbehaving, thinking about their cognitive flexibility and their emotional regulation is just as important, I suppose.
Yeah, you don't need to have ADHD to have executive function problems as well. Like, these things can happen separately as well. And I think having interventions on offer, and what this research shows as well, is that children who are below the average age of diagnosis, they're really young, but they still have these difficulties. So you don't really need to wait for a diagnosis to then put a support in place.
Yeah, if the symptoms are there, they're there.
Yeah, you don't, I mean, gosh, what an important message. You don't have to wait for a diagnosis to start intervention. Yeah. I might have a t-shirt printed with that written on it. it's a constant message that we have to keep pumping out. Right, for technical reasons, we haven't got much.
We haven't got lots of time left.
It's my fault.
So what does this mean for ADHD people themselves?
I think it means that in the same way as a one-size-fits-all thing, that you don't have to think that because you have ADHD, it means that you have these certain difficulties. It's good to realise that there's this huge variation, and that you're not going to look like someone else who also has ADHD, and you might struggle with different things. I think just to be aware that you might be different to other people, even though you have the same diagnosis, I think is a good thing to know.
I mean, I look a lot like you, and we both have ADHD.
Yeah, we're not the same. We don't have the same pattern of executive function difficulty.
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
I mean, it's not that dissimilar, really. Enormously forgetful. We're probably a bad example, because I think our executive function, our profile is probably not that.
Dad, the joke is that you're my dad.
I am your dad.
Sorry about that. I will never make a joke again.
Yeah, never make a joke.
That was terrible.
What?
I didn't go down well with you.
Oh, well, I'm not a very humorous person.
Yes, you are. Whatever.
A long day.
So what's next? Oh, my God. What's next question?
What's next question? What next question is it for you,
What's
please?
Your next question? Because I remember you mentioned that you've got lots of research that you might be able to talk about. So what else are you up to right now? What's next for you?
Hmm.
So the next thing I'm looking at is hot executive functions. So how these processes are engaged in more motivating contexts with rewards and things like that, and how the children in our sample do on those tasks as well, and whether there are dimensional associations there between how children do on those tasks and these same symptom dimensions.
And of course, the emotional side of things will kind of throw a whole curveball into it, and it's much more social, so you might find different things with the autistic kids and the ODD kids. Amazing stuff. And so will you come back and tell us all about it when you've got some more data and I've managed to sort out our count so we've got more time to record?
Well, we've got a full hour. That'll be great. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, all right. Was there anything else you wanted to ask, Tess?
No, I've got my 3-minute long question out of the way. It takes me every time I have a question on this podcast, it takes me 3 minutes to get it out of me. And every time these poor editors have to go back and fix my stuttering for 2 solid minutes before I can actually get my words straight.
But you're still a vital component.
Thank you. I feel like my role as the breaker downer of complex things has kind of drifted a bit because sometimes you'll say complicated terms and I'll know what they mean.
Yes, we probably.
And then I won't pick up on them.
Do you think we need to replace you with your younger brother?
Yes, swap me out with George. He'll do a much better job.
Because he's not done psychology. That's a fair point, Tess. But yeah, you're still doing. I don't think we overloaded people today, and we did bring it back to some.
I feel like you're picking up on them more than I am, which is concerning.
Well, I'm used to it. Talking to people about this stuff is my job. All right. Well, Kate, we've now started talking to each other, which is always a sign that we ought to kind of wrap it up, we can talk about each other in our own house. thank you very, very much for joining us. How would people be able to catch up with your work or the work of the NDAU? I've got it down. Neurodevelopmental Assessment Unit, the NDAU. How would people find out more about your work?
I think if they go onto the Cardiff University NDAU website, that would be great. You can give me a follow on Twitter.
Okay. We'll put your handle. I don't know what it is. Can't remember.
I don't know what it is either.
so many researchers just not into it at all. I think it's very laudable.
We'll put it in the description/show notes.
Yes, exactly right. We'll do that. So that's fine. We'll get it off you. And so thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely talking to you.
Lovely
chatting to you. All right. Thanks Bye-bye. Very much. Bye.
So that was Kate.
Bye, Kate.
That is the end of our series.
No!
We have got a couple in the bag for next series.
Yes!
If you have if you have suggestions of researchers, we have a few suggestions people come in of interesting people to talk about or talk to, but if they're not researchers, that's not really the brief of our podcast. We want to talk about people who are researching this subject.
I mean, you never know.
But anyway, if you've got a topic that you think might be interesting, we can find someone who's looking into it because it is quite an active area of research. Anyway, that is our series. We are not going to put our podcast out until at least September at this point because you're too busy over the summer.
I'm very busy over the summer.
Basically, we can't get pinned down tests to any kind of times into the next 6 weeks. I just want to say it's been a great pleasure to present with Tess and to interview all of our lovely researchers.
It has been lovely.
Just want to note, it's not deliberate that all of our researchers are women, but it's probably a good thing to note that. It sort of encourages me that science can perhaps move away from a male dominated into a more diverse area.
Girl power!
You were just waiting to say that. I was like, Tess was poised to do some kind of intervention. And it was that. Okay. Right. Well, there you go.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.